Good morning. We've had a number of requests to try to limit the questions and answers during this year, so we're going to experiment a little bit. If there's anything that's unclear or if you have a question that's directly related to the material, feel free to ask. But otherwise, we're going to go back to the original format where the shiur will go until 11:15, and then we'll have a question and answers afterwards. Now we're in the middle of the sugya of Toyu v'yohav, Toyu v'zavin. And as we learned, that if a person forces another person to give him a present, you meet someone late at night in a dark alley, and he asks you, and while holding a knife, he asks you to please give him your cell phone. So that is Toyu v'yohav, and the halacha is, if you ever get your hands on him, you can call the police. The halacha is that matano, even though you said reitzani, that matano does not have any meaning in halacha. However, as we pointed out, that to be able to, that since we have, if since you did actually give it, you handed it to him, you say, here, take it, it's a present. For you to undo the deal, you have to establish that it was truly an oinus. Clearly, a person in a dark alley late at night holding a weapon qualifies as an oinus. But, as we pointed out, there's machlokes mechaber and ramah, whether hafchada, whether intimidation, whether a threat itself is enough of an oinus. If someone just threatens, I'm going to do something to you. Now, obviously, if he pulls out a gun, that's not just a threat. You don't have to wait till he shoots before you decide to cooperate. But the point is, if he simply threatens that he will go ahead and do something, the mechaber says that is an oinus. The Ramah, Shem the Marik, says it's not. Furthermore, the Ma'bit says that if a person makes a threat which it's not clear whether he has the ability to carry it out, that would not be an oinus. Ma'bit adds, if you make a threat, but it's not clear whether the threat is really a threat, maybe there's nothing wrong with you going ahead and doing that. His case was you were preventing someone from traveling to a city to get married to a certain lady, who maybe that's a chesed, maybe it's not a threat. So in that case as well, the Ma'bit says that you would not be able to undo the matana afterwards. Again, there are all sorts of different cases. The svara behind it is that since in front of us we have what appears to be a bona fide transfer, we see the person gave it over, he said, right, Zani, unless you can prove that there was a true oinus forcing him to do it, you cannot back out. Now there is actually an interesting discussion that what happens if a fellow comes over to you, and it's not late at night, it's not in an alley, it's actually in broad daylight, in the middle of the street, and he says, you know, I would really like to have that cell phone that you're holding. By the way, the name is Capone, Al Capone. So there, the Chacham Shleimo says that even though he didn't do anything to you, and he didn't even threaten you, if the person is muchzik, that when he won something, he gets it, and he gets it in a very violent way. So then, in that case, he says that clearly would be called an oinus. You don't have to push your luck, and that would be an oinus, even though he never actually did anything to you. Now, this is all by Toyu v'yohav. You force someone to give a present. As we discussed last week, if you force someone to sell something to you, the halacha is drastically different. And there, if a person comes over and pulls out a gun and forces you to sell him your car, your house, your property, the halacha is the sale is a good sale. As long as you're getting the fair value, even though you clearly were forced, the halacha is we say, agav zuzi gam ramakni. Even though without the gun you certainly would not have sold it, being that you did, it's a sale and you are getting the full value for the item, there, Chazal or Yared the Seif Das of a person that under these circumstances he is going to Das. And listen, now that you explain it like that, I'm taka willing to sell it. And Allah is once it's sold, he cannot back out. He cannot undo the deal. Now, certainly, if you force him to accept below market value, that would be different. That would be a partial present. But if it's the full value, there the halacha is. The sale is binding, and neither party has the right to back out. Now, these guidelines seem pretty clear. Basically, if it's a present, you can back out if there was an oinus. If it was a sale, if it was you got the full value, then you do not have the right to back out. The cases where this issue comes up the most often, it's very uncommon for people to come to Beis Din and say that they did a deal, but it was at gunpoint. I mean, perhaps it happens, but if it does happen, then people generally don't come to Beis Din afterwards. They're just happy to escape with their lives. Where these issues come up all of the time is in the context of litigation. There was a Meister Halyer had a few weeks ago. There was a fellow who, there was a developer who had put together a big project. He was under severe financial stress. And he was trying to negotiate with his lender to buy the node at a discount. He wasn't able to do so. And he knew that there was a certain person who was a mumcha in this, who was very well connected with the lender, and he would be able to push through the deal. This person didn't want to deal with him. So ultimately what he did is he found a broker, someone who was very oisik in this parasha. And this person, he basically told this person, you get this middleman to go ahead and to convince the bank to sell me the note, I'll pay you $100,000. So the fellow gets to work, puts together the deal, everything's good to go. It was a very difficult deal. It took about a year for it to happen. There were constantly things were coming up. I think the deal was blowing up. And every time there was an issue, this broker would get involved. He'd put things together again. And Baruch Hashem, it seemed like it was going to close. The day before the closing, there was another crisis. Something came up, and the broker told the developer, that's it, the deal's dead. So the developer went ahead. He went directly to this person who had connections with the bank. And in desperation, he told him, listen, get the deal through. I'll pay you an extra $50,000. Okay, extra $50,000. Sure enough, he gets the deal done. The next day, they close. After the closing, the person who had set up the deal calls up the developer. I want the $100,000 that you promised me. So the developer said, okay, it's true. I promised you the $100,000. We have an agreement. But yesterday there was a crisis, and I had to pay the broker $50,000 from your commission to get the deal done. The middleman said, what do you mean from my commission? You paid him $50,000. I didn't pay him $50,000. It's very, if there was a problem with the deal, you should have called me. I could have gotten it through. If you went ahead and paid him extra, that comes out of your pocket. You can't spend my money. The fellow tells him, listen, you have two choices. Either take the 50 that I owe you, or take nothing. So the fellow's question is that what should he do? Should he accept the 50? Should he negotiate? What is the halacha when you have a litigation, or you have a dispute, and you're forced to settle? So we hear the Mechaber Paskins in Sif Gimel, that we have again, if you're forced to give a present, you can undo the deal. If you're forced to sell something, the halacha is the deal stands. Zok the Mechaber, if you force somebody to settle, pesher or pshara is like a sale, because what you're doing is you're buying the litigation risk. You don't know whether you'll win, you don't know whether you'll lose. You feel he owes you $1 million, he feels the number is zero. So if you settle on $500,000, the pshat is each of you is buying the risk. And therefore the Mechaber Paskins, by a mechira, even if it's done by pshar, even if it's done by anus, since you gave a little, you got a little, there's a transfer, the Mechaber Paskins, you will not have the right to back out afterwards. The problem is, now I didn't point out, there's a Mefurish Rashba Fakert. The Rashba in Siman Yud Beis has a case where a person borrowed $100,000. When it came time to pay back, he said, listen, I am not paying you. Either accept 50 cents on the dollar and write a release, or you're not getting it done. Zok the Rashba, no problem. Sign, take the $50,000, sign the release. And as soon as that's done, as soon as you have the money, wait till the check clears, that would be my advice. But as soon as the check clears, you go after the fellow and you bring him to Beis Din for the other 50. Because that's not a pshara, that's extortion. Everyone agrees he owes you the money. And he's just forcing you to sign a release, basically to give away, wait, $50,000. That is extortion. The Rashba says that will not work. So the Chavayim explain. The Rashba is talking about a case where there's a chayv borrower, it's clear he owes $100,000. He has no justification to say, I'm only paying you $50,000. So forcing you to sign any document because of that threat is blackmail. Whatever document you sign has absolutely no meaning. What the Mechaber means is there's real litigation. There's something happened, there's a dispute. Now, obviously, in every dispute, one party thinks he's owed $1 million, the other person thinks that he's bought or he only owes him a portion of that money. But since there's a legitimate suffix, we don't know what the halacha is, it's very normal for people to say, listen, instead of going through taking the litigation risk, instead of going through court, let's make a settlement. That's a bona fide sale. I'm selling my $1 million claim for $500,000 because that's better than taking the risk. So even if afterwards, after you sign the deal, you sit down, you take a year off from work, you learn through Chayshu Mishpat, and you come out, that it's clear had it gone to a dintura, you would have won. Okay? It's very nice, that's your opinion today. But since back then there was a real suffix, nobody knew who was right, who was wrong, and therefore you were settling, that is a mecher. You've sold your bigger claim in exchange for cash. And that would have a din of a mecher, and that would be binding even if it was an oinus. And Echroinim, add another similar case is what happens if you agree to a pshara because the other person was lying. He made up stories. He denied what was happening in Bezdin. So there also, if afterwards you're able to establish that he was lying, he was not telling the truth, you'd have the right afterwards to revisit the issue because that's not called a mecher. That's called, it's the truth is, it's also a problem of a pshara b'tayus, not just ba'inus. And there you would have the right to revisit. Now, where the halacha is a little bit less clear is the Chuvas Arash has a case where a person said, you owe me $100,000. The debtor denied it. He said, Lahadam, I don't owe you a penny. But you know what? I'll settle. If you'll take 50 cents on the dollar, we'll settle. And that's what happened. Afterwards, the borrower admitted to Beis Din or to Edom that he was all along, he knew he really owed the $50,000. So the Malva said, okay, so now that you admit that you owed me the money all along, you forced me to settle, I have the right to bring you to Beis Din and make you make a shvua and make you and be tadea you for the rest of the money. So what's the halacha in such a case? So Marchash says that according to the Rashba, the halacha is the creditor's right. Since today we know he owed at least the $50,000, the waiver that he forced him to sign on the rest of the money, which we simply don't know, the Marchash learns in the Rashba that the waiver is considered to tell you the Yahiv, and it's not a good waiver. The Rush argues. And the way the Nesivus explains, and the Nesivus says that it's not really a Machlekes, the Marchash says the Rashba argues, but what the Nesivus says is like this. Someone owes $100,000, and he says, I'm not going to give you a penny, and he forces you to settle for 50. So then if you can prove afterwards he really owes you the 100, the waiver is no good. Because the mechila of 50 was done for no reason. It was done simply to make him to pay the money that he owed you regardless. So that mechila is not a good mechila. However, Zakhtin Nesivas, in a case where even today, maybe Yutaka only owe 50. We have no evidence he owe more than 50. So in such a case, you say, the way the Rashi explains, when you go over to someone who owes you $50,000 and say, I want $100,000, so what's he going to do? You want 100? Okay, I want to pay you zero. If you want to, we'll settle at 50. That's not called an oinus. Since even today we don't know you gave anything away, there, whatever deal you signed is binding and you can't force him to make a shvur. It's only when today we know you gave up something in exchange for nothing, because all he did was he paid money that clearly he owed you. In exchange for what he owed you, you were meichel. You simply gave away some of the extra funds that you can back out. But if even today we don't know you owe more, there the way the Nesivus learns the Rush, you would have the right, or you would have, in that case, the deal would be binding. So let's go back to the broker case. The broker was supposed to be paid $100,000. This developer paid $50,000, what he held could come off his cheshbon. So what would happen, and now they have the fight. Now, the broker really has two options. One option is to sit down with the developer and say, listen, you had no right to be so generous with my money. I could have gotten the deal through without you. You know what, pay me $75,000 and let's call it a day. Now, if he would do that and afterwards want to come back and bring him to Bezin for the full 100, would he be able to do that? No. Because the developer has an argument, whether it's right or wrong, who knows. He's saying that the deal was dead. I had to go ahead and invest money to get the deal through, and that should come off your cheshbon. The broker disagrees. So if there's the $50,000 that's in question, and they settle at $25,000, that's a real pshara. They're bought, each of them is basically buying the litigation risk, and if he does that, the halacha is, once he accepts the deal, then it's over. He can't revisit it. On the other hand, if the broker goes to the person and says, listen, I'm not going to fight with you, give me the $50,000, I'll sign the release. Now in that case, he gave a release. Did he get anything in exchange for the release? No. He only got the $50,000. That's not in dispute. So, according to the Rajba, according to the Marachash, certainly afterwards he can go ahead and revisit the issue. But the truth is, even according to the Rosh, if he can establish that in halacha, his argument is correct, so then, even according to the Rosh, here he gave away, we know today, now that we know the facts, the Bezdin can see, he gave up a $50,000 claim, he got nothing in return, he simply got the money that he was clearly owed, so in such a case, he would pashtus, according to Lekulei Alma, be able to revisit the issue. So if you're in such a situation where you have a dispute, you should realize, if you negotiate and there's a settlement and you split it and you get anything more, and you get a dollar more than you're clearly entitled to al-pi halacha, then already you're dealing with a mekach, and then you will likely not be able to overturn the settlement. However, if you get absolutely nothing, he's settling and giving you only what is absolutely clear without any doubt is owed to you, and he's forcing you to give up real rights, in that case, even if you do settle, even if there's a kinyan, even if there's a heskim, you'd have the right to undo the deal afterwards. Now, of course, you do have to be careful whenever you accept a settlement, because if you accept a settlement and you plan on overturning it, as long as the person can establish there's any real tzad in halacha that you got more than you're entitled to, then the deal is going to be binding. It has to be this amount is completely unquestioned. Once there's a suffix, so then if it's a suffix, you settled. So you can only do this if you really have confidence and you're really sure that what you're accepting is unquestionably yours, then you'll be able to undo the settlement. But otherwise, once you sign the paper, once you agree, you're going to be bound to it. Now there's another interesting case where there's a discussion whether it's a mecher or a matana. And that is, what happens if a person, you have a business, you have an investment, someone forces you to accept him as your partner. Is that called a matana, or is that called a mechira? Now back then, if you were a partner, it was all in. There was none of this LLC limited liability. If the business deal went sour, both partners would bear the loss. So therefore the Marabach says that if someone forces you to become a partner, since it's true he has the upside, he also has the downside. So that's toyuhu vizavin. You've basically, the person has forced you to sell him a partnership share in exchange for him accepting the liabilities of the partnership. And therefore the Marabach says in a normal case where it could go up, could go down, that would be toyuhu vizavin, and the deal would be binding. On the other hand, if it's a phenomenal deal, he says the halacha would be different. Now Mari Beirav has an interesting chiddush. Mari Beirav says that if you don't give cash, that's toyu of yadav. Because it says like this, really what's happening? You don't want to sell the property, or you don't want to sell the partnership. The fellow pulls out a gun and forces you to do it. Why is the deal good? Why are you being forced? The answer is, because agav zuzigam rumaki, when you get paid for it, when there's cash in your pocket, under the circumstances, Chazal say, you're agreeing to the deal and you're bound to it. So like Mari Beirav, that's only when someone's actually giving you cash. The fact that he's relieving you of certain potential liabilities, that's not the same. And there's no svar of agav zuzigam rumakri. And therefore Mari Beirav says, in such a case, regardless, you'll be able to back out. You didn't get cash in your pocket. You'd be able to undo the deal. Now these are the halachos of oinus. So as we've seen, if someone forces you to sell something, as long as he pays you the fair price, the deal is a good deal, you can't back out. How can you protect yourself? You own a property, you know there is a ruthless developer that very much wants to get a hold of your property, he needs it for his project, and he will stop at nothing to get this property. Is there any way to protect yourself? So for this, there's a concept of Mesiras Maida. And that is, a person goes in front of Edom. He knows what's, he sees what's happening. He sees that if he doesn't do anything, that he's good. One day, this fellow is going to show up to his house with a gun, with a lawyer, and force him to sell it. So if you go over to two witnesses before and say, I own this property, this person is coming after me, he's trying to force me to sell, I'm being moser moida, I'm telling you right now, I don't want to sell. I'm selling only because I am forced. So this is a concept of moida, and if you do that, then the deal is off. Because the hope shot is that when there's an oinus, agav zuzugam aramakni. Once you get the money, so you agree to sell. But if you're moisir moida beforehand, that even though he's going to come and pull out a gun, I'm saying right now I don't want to sell. I'm going to accept the money because I want to save my life, but I don't want to do it. That mesiras moida will work, and afterwards you can bring him to Beis Din and you can undo the deal. Now, it's not uncommon for Dinei Torah for there to be a case in the Beis Din, and people will pull out a moida. They virtually never get the moida right. And the reason is that to write a moida, the most basic requirement that the Gemara says, and it's very difficult in practice, is what happens? A friend of yours comes to you and says, listen, I own this property. This developer is after it. He's going to force me to sell it. I want to write a moida. So I want you to write a shtar that this developer forced me to sell the property to. Are you allowed to sign that? Is that the Gemara? You can't sign. How do you know that it's true? It's very nice, he said. You know, this developer is on my case. Oinus, write a shtar. Maybe it's not true. For all we know, you're selling the property. You are hoping in a couple years from now the value will go up. So you're being moisir moida. The halacha is the Edom cannot write a moida unless they know that there actually is an oinus. They have to be in the room. They have to witness the person threatening, pulling out the gun, whatever it is. And only then they're in a position to say, we saw the oinus, we saw the extortion, the duress, and they can write a moida, and that'll undo the deal. But you cannot take the Baal Dover's word for it. Now, now the Rama adds, so let's say the Edom will write, that the Baal Dover will say, listen, I can't prove what happened because the fellow is not going to pull out a gun in front of you. More than that, you need two witnesses. So the fellow, so he says, tells the witnesses, just write, I was moisir moida, and then don't write that you know there's an oinus, and let Beis Din afterwards figure out whether there's an oinus or not. It's like the Rama, you can't do that either. Now, as machlokes, why? Some places can say that if you write a moida, even if the Edom don't write that they know the oinus, they just write that the person was moisir moida, we're afraid of a Beis Din toya. We're afraid of Beis Din will make a mistake. The case will end up by an incompetent Beis Din. They'll see the moida, they'll undo the deal. They won't ask questions, and they won't really be mavar whether or not there really was an oinus. So therefore, you cannot write a moida at all. Other poskim say, and it's a very nice svara, they say the reason why Edom can't write a moida unless they know the facts is because when you write a moida, what's going to happen? The deal is going to close. The buyer is going to buy. Now, as far as you know, for all you know, the buyer did nothing wrong. He never pulled out a gun. He never did an oinus. What you're doing by writing moida is you're giving the seller a weapon. Now the seller will run around town showing everyone the moida. He'll bring the buyer to Beis Din. And now the buyer has a problem. He has to go fight with the person. People won't want to buy the field because now the title is clouded. It's an issue. So you can't go ahead, just because your friend asked for a moida, you don't have the right to write it since it's causing someone else a loss. It's only when you have first-hand knowledge that, in fact, there was an oinus, then you can write the moida. But without the knowledge, if it's just the person telling you, you have absolutely no right to create a moida, and if you do, it's possible. So that's exactly the point, because it's very nice he said that, but perhaps when the person came to him with an offer, he changed his mind. You can only write the moida if the Edom have first-hand knowledge. They see the oinus, they see the pressure that's being put on the person, then you can write the moida. Now, it's interestingly, though, the Rashbam writes then Siman Beis that when a Moedah comes to Beis Din, since if the Moedah is written correctly, it says the Edom write that we saw the Oinus and we know, and the person was writing the Moedah. So since that's what the Edom wrote, Beis Din really can accept it at face value. They don't have to ask any questions. That being said, the Marikash, that lived a few generations later, says that today, where there are many Amaratim, and today people don't know this halacha, and people, unfortunately, will write in Moedah without knowing the facts, without knowing there's an oinus. Marikash says, Beis Din has to look into the fact, they have to figure out whether or not there really was an oinus. You cannot take a Moedah at face value, and you have to do due diligence and figure out whether or not there was a true oinus. Now, the Eitz in such a case, what do you do? Now that we just learned that you cannot write a Moedah if the witnesses don't have first-hand knowledge, and it's very difficult for there to be Edom that know what happened. Most Anosim are clever enough not to do it in public in front of two kosher witnesses. So the Eitz really is that there's no halakha that you have to write a Moedah. You can go over to the Edom and say, Baal Peh, I'm being Moedah you, that I'm about to sell the property, I'm selling you Bo'inus. Now, the Edom aren't doing anything wrong, they just listen to you. Once you're Moedah Moedah, if after the sale you can go to Beis Din and you're able to prove to Beis Din that it was an oinus, then because you have Edom, you're Moedah Moedah, even though they don't know why you're whether it was really an oinus, but if you have Edom that they were Moedah Moedah verbally, and then you have separate Edom that can testify that it really was an oinus, there you'll be able to undo the deal. So even though in Hilchos Moedah you cannot write a Moedah if Edom don't know about the oinus, but to do it verbally you could, and then if you can find Edom after the fact, you'll be able to back out.
Why didn't the Moedah
have Edom? Because the halacha is by Tayu V'Zavin, if you're being paid the fair value, even though we know you were forced, the deal is binding. That's the halacha of Tayu V'Zavin. If someone forces you to sell something, once you accept the money, we say, I got Zuzi Gamer Makni, that's it, the deal is a good deal. So it's only what you can do is, if you're Moedah Moedah beforehand, and you can prove there's an oinus, then you can back out. So if you have Edom before that know the oinus, that saw him threatening you, they can write the Moedah the right way, and wonderful. But if the Edom before didn't see the oinus, you're just hoping you'll have Edom later, the Eitza is first be Moedah Moedah and Baal Peh in front of Edom without knowing the oinus, and then after the fact, once you can prove the oinus, you'll be able to undo the deal. No, because the Moedah is on a specific. Correct. It has to be a specific. There's a lot of discussion in the Poskim. If you write a Moedah under pressure, the case was, or if you agree to do something under pressure, and then truth is really before Moedah, but the case was. It was in the context of a get, where the person didn't want to give a get. The woman's family went ahead, forged a bunch of documents. They had connections with the court system, and basically got a judgment for a huge amount of money. And basically told them, if you don't pay up, you know, we have this judgment. They had him locked up in jail because he didn't pay. And they told them, you know, if you don't pay up, if you don't give the get, this, you're gonna end up rotting in jail. Now what happened is they released the person. They signed a release that they got their money, and then he gave a get. So the question over there was, since they gave him a release from this debt before he handed over the get, so the moment they gave him the release, the onus was over. Once the onus was over, if he handed the get, it wasn't under duress anymore. So therefore, Ma'arik says in such a case, the get's a good get. Because there was, at the time that he wrote it, there was no oinus. Now there is the Ranach in Siman Nun Gimel qualifies this. He says if there even though that particular oinus is over because they were released from jail, but if the woman's family has that same forger on staff and they can do the same thing again, there's nothing stopping them from sending you right back to jail. So it's true that debt is released. But they can do the same exact thing again. There he's mitzadah to say it could be that's called an oinus. But if the oinus is truly gone, now the fact that maybe something new will happen or someone else will do it, or if there's a material change, then that oinus is gone, that moedah is gone, and you'd have to deal with each situation separately. Now there was, okay, I'll just end off with one last. This is an actual story. It ties together a few of the different issues that we've touched upon. A person passed away. He left over a sizable estate. He did not have any will or any trust or any sort of estate plan. So his wife ended up yarshining all of the assets. Now a few years later, they're working on an estate plan for the family. Was working on an estate plan. There was a tremendous amount of money. It was prime real estate in the city. And what happened is they ended up having a fight. There were a bunch of siblings. I think there were seven children. And the issue was, there was a lot of money to be distributed. And the issue was how to distribute the money. The younger children, who they themselves either weren't married or had very small families, said, we have seven children. Let's split it seven ways. Everyone takes one. Everyone will get 1/7 of the estate. The older siblings, they had larger families, and they said, "Listen, if we each take 1/7, we run into all sorts of tax issues. What we should do is we should divide it among all the grandchildren." And since they had larger families, they had much more children. They would end up with a much larger share of the estate. So this ended up being blowing up into a bit of a nasty fight, back and forth. They couldn't get to any resolution. And finally they decide, okay, they're going to a din Torah. Day before the din Torah, the oldest and the youngest sibling sit down together. They say, listen, what do we need this whole fight, the family? Let's cut a deal. They sit down, and they ended up making a pshara. They ended up, whatever the pshara was, some sort of arrangement, each person gave a little, and that was the deal. Everyone was very happy. This arrangement went on for about approximately 20 years. During the 20 years, this real estate in Manhattan went from whatever the valuation was 20 years ago, it value absolutely skyrocketed. 20 years later, the youngest son woke up, and he brought the rest of his family to a din Torah. I want to undo the deal. It's a pshara, but it was a pshara b'tayis, because first of all, I didn't realize then, I thought we were making cutting deals how to distribute our mother's money. What I realize now is that in halacha, when our father died, we yarshened it all. So it wasn't a question of giving away the mother's money. It was a question of simply taking money out of my pocket and giving it to you. And second of all, he said it was bonus. There was this whole family fight. There was World War III was going on. And I felt pressured to give it away. And now that we see clearly that I was right in halacha, there's really no tzad that you were right, I should have the right to undo the deal. So, actually what happened in this case, it was very, very interesting. The entire session itself was very interesting. We asked the younger sibling, like when the fight was going on, how much of a fight was it? Was it really an oinus? And he said, yes, it was a World War III. The family, you know, it looked like the family just wasn't going to speak to each other. It was Gehenna. The next question is like, when you put the family decided to start this fight and put the family through Gehenna, were you really convinced that you were right? He said, yes, 1,000%. We knew we were 1,000% right, and that's the only reason why we would have done it. If there's any suffix, we would have never done it to the family. Okay. So if you knew you were 1,000% you were right, why did you settle the day before the din Torah? So his response was, we made a cheshbon, even though we were completely right, but family is family, and it's not worth putting the family through it. So the next question we asked him is, can you explain to us, if you knew we were right, and you decided to be a vater so as not to put the family through this fight, what are you doing here today? So he hemmed and he hawed. He didn't have a very good answer. We ended up, you know, throwing out the case for a number of reasons. But in halacha, what's talking about halacha in such a case? L'chayra, he has a good time. He clearly gave up money. In halacha, there's no suffix. Clearly, he was right. There's no halacha. You could be an older child that has more grandchildren somehow is entitled to a bigger share of Yerusha. So had there been a real suffix in halacha, neither party knew the halacha, so then that's clearly a pshara. That's clearly like a mecher, you wouldn't be able to back out. But in a case where the halacha is clearly like one side, there's no real tzad, and he's settling just because of an oinus, he should have the right to say afterwards, once the oinus passes, everyone grows up, they're not holding by fighting anymore. In that case, he should be able to back out. However, we run into the other issue, and that is, all these cases, you need a true oinus. Oinus, in one case, meant your life is in danger. You're being threatened. You're going to, on the other hand, if you're just simply, the person is upset at you because he wants something else. But you have a din Torah scheduled for the next day. He's not threatening to do anything. You're simply not getting, you simply want to settle in order to make, for the family to get along better. That clearly would not be an oinus, and you would not have the right to back out. Mitzad sheni, you do find that there are cases where there was the Shura Shai, Sim Kuf Lamed Beis is a case where there was a couple that was having Shalom Bayis problems. So the Shver decided in order to, you know, to protect his daughter, he promised the Chosin that he built him a house. He said, move into the house, and if you don't fight with my daughter for a year, the house is yours. Kachava, day 366, they get into a fight, and they get divorced. But he says, it's my house, I get to keep it. So there, the Churashai says, no, nothing doing. That's called an oinus. If there's shalom bayis issues, and you're trying to stop the shalom, you're trying to protect your daughter, you're trying to stop the shalom bayis issues, that is enough, that's called an oinus, and you'd be able to back out. But that's a case where there's a husband and wife where you have responsibilities of how to treat your wife. If you're not doing that, that's called an oinus. In a case where you have two brothers and they're just upset at each other about because of how they're dividing the Arusha, that clearly would not be an oinus. And that, once the deal is done, you would not be able to back out. Any questions?
He has a developer who knows he wants the property. And the developer is on the board of the yeshiva, he wants his son to get a shtetl. That's an example like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it, even though theoretically he doesn't really want to sell this, but the bottom line is the fact that his son is going to get the shtetl, that lechayer should be like money. You know,
okay, so Two issues. The first issue is that oinus is always, you have money, or you have your life, you have a property. If you don't sell the property, you're going to either lose your life, your money, or whatever is being threatened. On the other hand, if someone's promising, you have an eidin that you never need a shteller for. So if you want to sell the property to someone who will get you that shteller, that's not an oinus. That's a business deal. So in such a case, that's not he's not threatening to do. It's only oinus is only when he threatens to do something that he's not allowed to do. He threatens he's going to hurt you. He threatens he's going to rob you. He threatens he's going to do an avla to you. So then, to save yourself from that threat, if you go ahead and you sell it, we can deal with the sugya of tel yuvas oven, which anyway it's going to be a good zvini. But in a case where you want something, that will not be an oinus. There is a gemara. There's a where a person wanted to get married. The woman played hard to get and said, I'm only willing to get married if you write over that I will inherit all of your assets. So over there, there's a the Gemara says, if the person goes ahead and he writes it to his son, or if he's Moisir Moidah, which is the way most places can learn that, then the Moidah works. So we'll discuss that more next week, but you do see this concept that even though who asked him to get married, don't get married and don't give the presents. But there, where there's a certain level of pressure when you're giving a present, not a sale, when it's a present, there we see a moidah can help, even though you're giving the present because you expect to get something in exchange. Again, it needs a hesber, we'll talk about that next week. But by a sale, clearly, if you sell it and you did it because you have a benefit, the sale will stand.
Why by the share over here,
Because getting someone a shteller is a toiva he doesn't have to do for you. If he says, I will not give you the shteller, that's not a threat, that's not an oinus. Beating up your daughter is a threat. And that's something which you're not allowed to do. And that's an oinus. He feels compelled to help save his daughter from the misery. And that's called an oinus. Okay, good. So that's... It's true. Okay, I hear. What? The facts that the true Ashai is dealing with is that he was the one doing the avla, and therefore the father-in-law was trying to save his daughter from this avla, from these shalom bayis issues. So there's no set statute of limitations. As we mentioned before, if something changed, you write the Moida, this person is on the zoning board, and he told me if I don't sell this to him, he's going to do it in my other project. So once that other project gets approved, so the Moida might not expire, but clearly that oinus isn't there anymore. And if you close afterwards, where it's already, you can bring Edim, the buyer can bring Edim, that oinus no longer exists, then the Moida would be void. So again, if you say you're not getting into my school, so to the extent that it's his school and he doesn't have to accept any of his children, so I would say that's not an oinus, because he has the right to say, I don't want to. You want to get your kid the same way he can tell you, tuition's $10,000. If you don't pay $10,000, you're not coming into my school. So if he wants to go ahead and he has the right to do that, if it's his school and he can... Okay, that's what I said. I said if. So assuming it's his school and he has the right to do that, that's called minyas ha-toiva. I'm just not doing a toiva for you. Even if he didn't, I perhaps should do it. There's a case in the Marik where a person was captured. The woman's family said, we will be paid to you only if you give a get. Now there's a chiyuv of pidyon shvuyim. You certainly have a mitzvah and an obligation to do it. But saying I will not do a mitzvah until you go ahead and do, is not considered an oinus. Mitzad sheni, if you say, I will call every school in town and tell them, blacklist you, and tell them, do not, so that's not minyas ha-toiva. There you're going ahead and actively doing something and stopping other people from doing business with him. That might already be called a threat. And again, you could, I guess, say that perhaps the other schools are just in collusion with you, but again, that yesh lo doin on that nakuda. What? Yeah, in every case of toyu v'zav and toyu v'yav is always loisachmoy. You're forcing someone to give it up. It's like sachmai, perhaps it's chamas. But our question over here, we're dealing simply with, is the deal, does it stand, or can you reverse it? But whether it's, you know, whether or not, certainly you're not allowed to meet someone in a dark alley and relieve him of his cell phone, even if you pay him at the end. It's certainly going to be usur. Our question is just whether the deal can be undone afterwards. Excuse me?
By get, did we say in the Gemara that it's lighter? By get, it's in Galdas, was that not under...
Fine, so we discussed the concept of Moidah by Zvini. We did not yet get to how to deal with a Matano or get. Normally, you don't need a Moidah, because normally, once you can prove there's an oinus, then even without a Moidah, the halach is to you, it's not a good deal. But we'll see, again, we'll see the Sivas, we'll see... Yeah, if you're right. If it's not, if you're not getting, if you're not getting paid for it, then you're right. Then it's matana and mecher, and we're going to. We're saying fakir. It's called. It's considered toyu. That's not called an oinus. Saying I will not do it, I will not be paid to you, is not called an oinus. And therefore, Sai by Matana and Sai by Mecher, the deal would stand because he didn't do anything wrong to you. The person was in jail anyway. The fact that the person says, I will not do the mitzvah pinyan shvui unless you give a get, is not called an oinus. So even by get, this halacha would be true. Right. So the point over here is that we have in front of us Edim, a transfer was done. It was sold, it was given, everything, he said rights on it. You want to overturn that. You can only overturn a deal when it's clear you only did it because of that. Once it's only a threat, people usually aren't so intimidated. And if it's just a threat, they'll take their chances, they'll this, they'll that. We don't have a hoichacha that it was done because of the threat. As long as it's a suffix, it's Dvarim Shabbalay. It really goes back to what we mentioned. As long as, if there's a suffix, what the intent was, we go by what was stated. What was stated was, Roitzani, take it. You want to overturn what was stated, you need a Raya Brura. So if anything which people will lob down can be intimidated, you lose that kayach, that taina of, and that haychacha, that's definitely an oinus.